program develops great teammates and leaders to create world-class teams and has the privilege of working with more than 160 collegiate and professional athletic teams and corporations throughout North America annually. Welcome to our On the Attack podcast, where our most senior program leadership instructors draw from years of experience working with hundreds of clients and briefly share their powerful insights and thoughts on relevant team building and leadership development challenges. Today, myself, Mac, and my teammate Omri are going to talk about managing and developing talents. Now, Omri, the reason why I kind of wanted to talk about this is our previous podcast that we sent out on best utilizing, you know, the transfer portal, and we talked a little bit about the NIL process, and we had a lot of feedback from coaches, particularly about that question of, well, what do we do when we have individuals who have a tremendous amount of talent, we think, but don't totally fit our core values? Or there's somebody that comes available in the portal who has the talent to help us win, but doesn't truly fit who we are. So we want to talk a little bit about today about how we kind of manage that process. Thoughts, Omri?
Yeah, Max. So first off, again, we got some pretty interesting feedback, and ultimately bottom line from a lot of the coaches were, yes, culture and alignment are super important for us, but ultimately we need to get some dudes or dudettes, right? We need the people that are able to make a difference in the game. And by the way, we don't disagree with that. Why? Winning matters. And your job as a head coach and your ability to affect a program long-term, first and foremost, is you're going to have that ability by staying in the position. And in order for you to stay in the position, especially at high-pressure jobs, you're going to have to win. So we're not saying, we're not knocking that at all. However, and this always, I always think of a quote or something that I heard from Coach Boyle at CU men's basketball. When I sat down, we had this conversation exactly when he said, hey, the portal, if you want to build a good team, go to the portal. But if you're trying to build a program, it's not going to cut it. And ultimately for us is understanding that in the driver's seat as a coach, the leader of the organization, first, let's have an honest evaluation about who are we and what are the things that we actually value. Do we just want to win? And do we just value performance? In that case, go ahead, bring everyone you can from the portal. From the portal, that's going to help you win this season, get it done, and then you're going to just reset that process every year. And hey, we're good as long as we're saying that's what it is. Or are we an organization that in fact values? And there's going to be a spectrum that we're going to discuss in this episode. But ultimately understand that bringing the guy or the gal, there are going to be those difference makers for us that we know are not going to meet the standards that we are going to confront and demand from the rest of the team. We're essentially undermining everything that we're trying to build in the long run because we're letting the people that are talented walk all over our standards. And that's going to create some issues, even if it's going to allow you to win some games. And by the way, we've seen plenty of times where this whole thing just turns into a hot mess. Because rarely do those things work from our experience. But yeah, I think, Mac, it all comes down to, hey, let's actually look at ourselves as coaches. What are we trying to gain? What are the things that we're willing to be lenient with? And ultimately, what actually do we value? Do we value our values or do we value performance? What do you think of that?
Yeah, one of the things that we say is that hope is not a strategy. And, you know, I can relate that to when we talk to teams about the concept of leading by example, which we don't believe is an effective leading strategy, at least nowadays. Because what most young people, athletes, think of leading by example, they think of just doing the right thing, showing up early, working hard, paying attention in meetings, but then they just hope. They just hope that they see their teammates see them do it, and they do it too. And that's not a strategy. We can't afford to rest our season on just hoping that everyone does the right thing if I do it myself. It doesn't work. But we see a lot of coaches, they apply that kind of hope, meaning, yeah, they go after somebody in the portal, or maybe they recruit somebody who doesn't fit who they are. But man, they hope he can get his act together. They hope he can kind of come along. Maybe that athlete hasn't proven anything yet. You know, maybe they're going into their junior, senior. They haven't produced on the field yet, but coach is hoping that they will. And consequently, a lot of times you've got an individual athlete, you've got an influential athlete who's not meeting their standards, who is bringing the locker room down, and then he doesn't perform in the field either. Well, now you're just left with, you've got an athlete who didn't perform from a talented standpoint, because everyone wants the next Bo Jackson. I'm not saying Bo Jackson was a bad teammate. I don't know anything about that, but obviously, right, he's a generational talent. But everyone wants the next Bo Jackson in the portal, or the next Bo Jackson in the roster. Well, the problem is, a lot of times you just hope, you've got an athlete who shows some what you think potential, and a lot of times you just hope that, well, if he can be get tougher, if he can be more accountable, if he can be less selfish, man, with his talent, he can be the next Bo Jackson. But then he doesn't. And then you're just left with an athlete who, one, didn't produce like you'd hoped he would, but also he brought your culture down. Now you're in a worse spot than you were when you started. So if we talk about, because we have to have talent in the organization, Omri, but who are the best people, do you think, that we want to bring into our teams?
Great question. So for that, let's define best. Let's define what it means. What does the best person for your team, for your organization mean? What does that person look like? And for us, the best people are going to be in the intersection between alignment with our core values, meaning our culture, and talent. Why? Because yes, we need talent on our roster if we want to be relevant in achieving the things that we want to achieve as a team. However, the other side to it is alignment with who we are as a culture. Those people that sit right in the middle are going to be the perfect candidates. And this is what I was referring to earlier, where this is a spectrum, right? You're going to have some people that are going to be heavier leaning on that culture side, meaning they align with our core values and we absolutely love them. There's going to be some people that are going to be leaning heavier on that talent side, because they're just that good and that valuable. And there's going to be the equation of return on investment when we're talking about managing that talent. And Mac, you can speak to that. But ultimately, everyone needs to have some of it for this to be a viable solution for us that's going to be able to work long term. And selfishly, for us at the program, selfishly, we're going to make sure that everyone that joins our team heavily leans, we're not heavily aligns with who we are as an organization. Why? Well, selfishly, I want to be around the people that value the same things as I. Why? Because I'm not saying the same as me, right? We can come from different places, different backgrounds, ethnicities, races, gender, doesn't matter. We're going to have diversity with where we come from and our backgrounds, but in terms of where we have zero diversity is the way we align around our culture and our core values. So to that, again, if we're looking at that spectrum, somebody can be heavier leaning on that talent side. Okay, cool. But he still has to have a part in that buy-in of our culture, or else it's just not, it's going to be, in my opinion, it'll create more problems for me as a coach with the other 119 guys that are looking at me, allowing that person walking all over the standards that I then expect them to do just because he's got talent. If we're talking in the context of a football team, it's just impossible. And by the way, a little game here, or a little challenge for our coaches. One of our coach clinics that we'll give out, called Creating and Sustaining a Championship Culture, will discuss this alignment, right? And we'll bring up the point that we are who we are as people. We are who we are by the age of typically 9 or 12. And people typically don't change. Now, we can change. It could be some major life events or trauma that can change who you are. But for the most part, you are who you are. Maybe when you were young, you weren't able to pinpoint the exact term, whether it's integrity or discipline or whatever, on those personality traits that you possess. But for the most part, you are who you are. And that is why we want to make sure that we select the people that align with that into our culture. As kids, we're going to gravitate towards the people that share the same activities as we do, right? Your football players, your softball teammates, whatever it may be. As adults, we're going to choose to spend more time with the people that align with our values, not so much shared activities. Proof to that is, if you're a coach, I want you to close your eyes and imagine a student athlete that you got to coach in your career that maybe wasn't that talented, but checked every single box from a culture piece, and you absolutely loved him or her. And now on the other side, picture that one athlete that was just lights out talented, performed like a stud every night, but did not align at all with the values that you as a head coach have, or the values of the culture that you were a part of, which typically would align. And that individual, as big of a difference maker that he or she were during the game, you absolutely couldn't stand that. That right there is the answer, right? So it can't be completely opposites. There needs to be some alignment for us to be able to run this thing and actually build a program, not have to reset, hit the reset button every year. Mac, what do you think?
Yeah, Omri, I'm fascinated talking to coaches about kind of the recruitment process and how they can watch game film or go to a camp or clinic or, you know, have dinner with an athlete or talk to them on the phone and be able to gauge some of those intangibles, right? Talent is relatively easy to, to evaluate, from a professional coach, but a lot of times it's those intangibles. How do you really tell how tough or selfless or, you know, disciplined somebody is? You know, what can we look for? So maybe that's something we do a later podcast on. Because I, like I said, I always like to talk to coaches about that. However, even the best organizations in the world are at best like 500, meaning, yeah, you can have all the things that you look for. You can sit down at somebody's dining room table and maybe they know the right answers to give you. And then they get in your program and they're very different from what you had maybe thought, what you had recruited. Not from a talent standpoint. We kind of know what that is, but from a standpoint of those intangibles. Well, what do we do then? And again, the best corporations in the world, like I said, are probably batting about 500. Meaning there's only so much you can tell from that initial interview process. Well, so what do we do when we have an athlete that we bring into our program, again, who doesn't truly fit who we are? Now, one of the things we talked about the portal in our last episode where, you know, we had talked about, and like you're talking about today, about going and it's easier to bring athletes into your program. Well, now the portal also makes it easier to get rid of them, right? If that's the case, because again, that's the importance. One of the importance of having clearly defined values and standards, like we talked about last time, is that if an athlete doesn't fit those standards, one, not only are you going to get frustrated with them, they're not going to enjoy being in your program either, right? So a lot of times that can be some of the self-selection where when we have athletes who frankly don't have the talent that you need, but also aren't fitting you from a culture perspective, right? They're not checking either box. Well, now the portal's a good way for them to go find some place that maybe they do fit into, right? So that can be an advantage there. But what about those athletes? You know, what do we do about those athletes who maybe they do have the talent that we need, the talent that's going to allow us to, right, to compete for championships. However, they don't really fit who we are. Now, there's a concept that we use when we talk about the roles of a leader. Now, first of all, we believe leaders have two standards in addition to being a great teammate. Staying focused on accomplishing the mission and taking care of our people. Now, that never changes. However, we also believe each and every leader has three roles that they have to cycle through with all their people. Right? That of mentoring, coaching, and commanding. Now, picture a pyramid or a triangle where the base of that triangle, the first level, is mentoring. The middle of that triangle is coaching, and the apex or the point of the triangle, if it's facing up, would be commanding, right? just by definition, mentoring, that's culture. That's the stuff we're talking about, right? That's selfless stuff and discipline. That's how to do all those things, the intangible stuff. Coaching, well, that's the skills you need to be specific at your sport, whether it's pass blocking in football or, you know, free throw shooting or whatever the case may be, right? And at the tip of that triangle is commanding. Commanding is pretty much just telling people where to go and what to do, right? One of the biggest mistakes that we see coaches or leaders, right? And this is military, corporate, athletic, everything else, is that a lot of times we'll bring an athlete into our organization who has talents. We want to keep them around, but they're not truly fitting our core values. So let's say in case of the program, we're selfless, tough, and disciplined. We have somebody that doesn't truly fit those values. Well, what a lot of coaches will do is, well, they'll just keep mentoring that athlete. Now, one of the reasons why it's shaped like a pyramid or a triangle, mentoring being the base, is just purely from a standpoint of time and energy. Mentoring, that takes a ton. And coaches, you all know that. That's hours spent with a young man or woman in your office, right? Trying to make them, help them, teach them how to be more selfless, be tougher, be more disciplined, right? All those things they need to be successful at your program. Omri, you and I are still being mentored by people in our lives. That's a lifetime process. Now, on the flip side of that, commanding, that's pretty quick. You go here, you do this, right? Not necessarily easy, right? But from a time and energy perspective, it definitely takes less. But one of the mistakes that we do see is when we have an athlete who joined our program who doesn't fit who we are, we try and mentor them. We try and make them more selfless. We try and make them tougher. We try and help them be more disciplined. But then a year goes by and they haven't changed. Well, we don't want to give up on them, so we keep trying. We keep having them in our office. We keep spending time trying to make them more selfless, trying to help them be tougher. And another year goes by and they still haven't changed because, frankly, they don't want to. What happens then is we find ourselves in a role as leaders where we're investing 90% of our time and effort into that 10% of our team who's not going to change because they don't want to change. What we have to realize is that as leaders, our allegiance is never to the individual. And I know we've had a lot of pushback over that over the years, frankly. Our allegiance is not to the individual. It's to our unit, right? To our team. And in that moment, when we're spending, again, 90% of our energy with 10% of our team, we've got one or two athletes that we're spending all the time in our office. Omri, those athletes who you talked about, who do fit our culture, but they do need to be mentored. We're not giving them the mentorship because we don't have any time left, right? Because we're spending all our time and energy on the people, frankly, who haven't deserved it, right? Maybe because of their talent level, we're letting other people in our rooms down. So our allegiance, it's not to the individual. It's to our team or our positional group. It's to our unit, whatever the case may be, right? And, you know, Omri, just a quick experience there. You know, years ago, we did an event where we had various athletes from different teams, you know, within the school. And I remember it was two of the basketball players. One of whom was a solid, great, good teammate, and the other one was just bad, right? You know, poor body language. You know, just he didn't want to be there. You could just tell. On the first day, second day, he didn't even show up. He didn't even show up to the second day of training, right? And I asked his teammate about, hey, and he kind of shrugged his shoulders and kind of shook his head, letting me know that this was actually a pretty common thing with this player. Now, no coincidence, this player, the one who didn't show up, was also the best player in the team, maybe in the conference, right? And later when we met with the coaching staffs, and this was all different teams, all different programs, but I had an opportunity to meet with the coaching staff, and I kind of told this particular coach that, well, they had an athlete that, you know, we recommend flipping the triangle on this guy. Meaning, yeah, coach is spending all this time trying to mentor this young man, when he should just give that mentorship, we believe, to other people on his team and just tell this guy, command him, tell him what he needs to get done. But I saw the coach, this is probably maybe 8 months later, I saw him at a convention, and he said, he was respectful, it was a good conversation, but he said, hey, Mac, you know, I just want to let you know that I didn't give up on this athlete. You know, I kept mentoring him, kept plugging away, and, you know, he's not perfect, but he really came along, he really made some changes. But meanwhile, I didn't say this, but I'm thinking, well, coach, you only won one game last season, right? So great. Maybe he affected this one really talented athlete, but he let his team down. So Omri, what I come back to there is we look at the pyramid of, we look at the roles of a leader. base being mentorship, coaching in the middle, right? Commanding at the apex. What we recommend with some athletes is we just got to flip that triangle upside down. We might have an athlete on our roster who, man, they're really talented. We need them, but they don't truly fit who we are. Yeah, trying to mentor them, trying to change them, that's just wasted energy. What we recommend is we just command to those athletes. Just tell them where to go, how to get lined up in the fields. We make sure that they're not negatively influenced in our locker room. We just kind of tell them what to do. And then we use that time and energy that we now have available to give it to some of those younger athletes who have earned the right to be mentored, who have earned us to give us our time and energy, right? They've earned that. But if we haven't flipped that triangle on that one or two individuals, right, we don't have that space. Now, a couple things to notice on that, Omri. One, regardless of the orientation of that triangle, whether you flip that upside down and you're going to command an athlete and the mentorship's on top, or it's based like it's normal, that coaching block never changes. No matter what, we're still going to give an athlete all the skills he needs on the field or on the court or ice, whatever the case may be, right? What does change is how much time we spend with that athlete in our office mentoring them and how much time we just tell them what we need them to do, right? That is going to change. When we actually flip that triangle upside down, there's not a mathematical equation for that. That's kind of the art of coaching, right? I will say this, every single time that I can think of that we've talked to usually about a specific athlete, we've talked to a coaching staff about that, the response has been, yeah, we should have done that last year, right? So we believe just flipping the triangle on some athletes, that can be a great way of those athletes who we want to manage their talent. We can't get rid of them. We don't want to get rid of them. We need their talents, but we also don't want them to negatively influence our team. This can be a great way to do that. Any thoughts on that, Omri?
Yeah, I think the final thing that I have to say for the day is when I view a team, I don't like to look at it as a collective of individuals. A team is an organism. And I think when things are running smooth and everyone's aligned and pulling in the same direction, it becomes an unstoppable force. And when we view a team as a collective of individuals, we can say, hey, we can just bring one person that's going to change everything, and we'll manage this person a certain way, and we'll manage another person another way. And ultimately, you as a coach, you're going to be pulled in so many directions, you might forget what the main objective is. So the baseline is, yes, let's look for talent. Let's make sure we recruit for talent. But ultimately, remember that putting it on those student athletes and on those athletes of, hey, we take great pride in who we are as a team, as an organization, and this is for everyone, but not everyone's for it. And keeping that in the back of our minds of saying, not being tempted by bringing that one person that, hey, he might change everything for us. He might also change everything for the worse, not only for the good. So be very cautious and make it a measured approach to every single person that's going to come in, looking at the return on investment when it comes to what's the gain from the talent, but what can I lose based off of all the other things that come into it. And that's all I would say.
Thanks, Omri. The program and this podcast mission is to develop great teammates and leaders to create world-class teams. We hope we have done so. For more in-depth conversations, check out the program podcast and gain unparalleled insight into team cohesion, leadership development, and personal growth with program CEO and founder Eric Kapitulik, as he speaks with corporate leaders, professional athletes, coaches, and authors. Our book, The Program, Lessons from Elite Military Units for Creating and Sustaining High-Performance Leaders and Teams, can be found at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. To sign up to receive our monthly letter on leadership or to learn more about the program and our leadership development and team-building services for your own team, go to theprogram.org. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at theprogram.org. And on LinkedIn, at the-program-LLC. If you have any questions or would like us to address a particular topic in a future podcast, please contact us. Finally, if you have enjoyed today's On the Attack podcast, Please leave a review of it on whatever platform you have accessed it from. Thank you and attack.